This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
And this is Megan Arcat from Beach Bungalow 8.
And this is Joni Webb with Code to Texas.
And this month on the Skirted Roundtable, we are welcoming interior designer Toby Fairley, who is the March issue of House Beautiful. She has the cover, and that's incredibly exciting. So Toby, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, ladies. I'm so excited to be here.
So this is a very exciting year from you, as you're one of Traditional Home Magazine's top 20 young designers in America for 2009, which is huge.
Now, yes.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. That was very, very exciting.
And so as we do with our guests, we love and our listeners love to find out about your past and what brought you to where you are now and what has kind of informed your design style. So tell us about yourself.
Okay. Well, obviously I come from a really small state, Arkansas. And so when I was growing up, I knew a few interior designers, but it wasn't really a huge career in our area. My parents had used Kaki Hawker Smith, who was the interior designer for Bill and Hillary Clinton one time on a project. And so I knew a little bit about her, but I didn't really know that much. I wasn't exposed to the career a whole lot. It wasn't really on my radar screen as far as something that I might do for a living. I did have an aunt and a cousin who were both designers and had degrees in design in Fort Worth. And so when I was in the summers, I'd go visit them a good bit and just got a little bit of a taste of the career and, you know, what it was like. But it really still wasn't thinking about doing that for a living. And so I went to college at the University of Arkansas, and I did the whole sorority thing and was enjoying college life.
What sorority were you in?
Kappa Kappa Gamma.
Me too, Toby.
Who's me? Megan? Cool.
Megan. I was a Kappa too.
Yay. Fun. Well, I was doing the sorority thing, but I was still a really good student, and my dad had always said, oh, get a business degree, get an accounting degree, you can never go wrong with that. So I got an accounting degree, believe it or not, and I did okay in it. I probably made A's and D's, but I wasn't loving it, and I just kept thinking about design, and that was in about 94, I would say, that I was finishing up my accounting degree, and design was really starting to get on everyone's radar screen nationally, you know, HGTV and all that stuff. And so having the fabulous, loving parents that I have that support all my decisions for the most part, I decided to go on back and immediately get a design degree. And so I went back to school. And while I was getting my design degree, I had so many hours for my accounting degree, I thought, I've got to do something else with this. So get an art, you know, art minor, or what am I going to do? And I had this really brilliant instructor that said, you should, since you have an accounting degree, you should get an MBA. You will never go wrong with that. It'll do so much for your business. So that's what I did. So I kind of have the right and left brain both going, which has been unbelievable for my business and my career.
Did you ever consider being an architect, since 2 out of 3 of the people we interview tell us that they at one time thought about being an architect?
No, I really didn't. Since my path was a little indirect to design, I had no really connection to architecture necessarily, and I had a calling to all of these beautiful things and color and pattern, and I just really loved the decorative side of interior design. And like a lot of people that go back to get an interior design degree, I thought I was getting a degree in decorating, and they're far from the same thing. But that was really how I got there.
And so you have all these great degrees, and did you go to work for another firm, or did you, you know, jump right out into your own?
Well, I did a design internship in Las Vegas, so kind of not far from sorority life. I went to Las Vegas and worked for a casino design firm for the summer, just the summer. And then I did one other internship postgraduate with an Arkansas designer who had I think he had recently closed it when I went to work for him, but he had previously had an office in New York City and in Arkansas. He was from New York, his wife was from here. And so I did a brief stint with him, another like 2 or 3 months, and then I jumped right in. And I come from a family who owns a small business. My great-great-grandfather started in a telephone company, which is a local service provider. You don't want to get into all that telecommunications probably, but anyway, I came from a long line of us working for ourselves, and so I was too stupid to know better, so I just jumped right in and hung out my shingle and went to work.
Who was your first client?
Other than my mother and one of my friend's moms, who I did a couple of little bitty things, I worked for a client that was the sister of one of my high school boyfriends, which is funny. And I actually will never forget the stuff I did for her house. It's far from what I work on now, but I was so excited to have that job.
What kind of work was it? Was it
It was more, you know, light decorating in her home. She lived in a small town where I'm from, which is actually outside of Little Rock. And so it was just really kind of getting my feet wet, you know, like with accessorizing and rearranging her things. And it was just kind of my first little taste at working with someone, which was a great experience, but really
kinda
funny.
Kind of like what I do now.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, okay. So
It's kind of like what we do now, except on such a teeny tiny little scale. I mean, I think about the budgets I work in now, and not that client actually has plenty of money now, but it just, you know, totally, totally different. The things I've been exposed to now and the perspective I have is so far different than that.
All right. Well, you mentioned the big B word. So what is a typical budget that you do work in? Is there one or?
Probably. I don't usually do a job, let's see, over most of our jobs we end up doing at least $250,000 over a small period of time. Like for two or three or four rooms, we might spend that much money. Sometimes we spend that on one room. It just kind of depends. But anymore, very few of my projects that I take, I do less than a couple $100,000 for any particular client at a time.
How big is your firm right now?
Yeah.
How big is my firm?
Yeah.
I have 12 employees at the moment. So I have three designers that are all, I'm still the lead or the, you know, the visionary for all the projects, but I have three project managers. So they're the primary contact for different clients to make sure that somebody's always taking good care of people because I travel so much. And then I have two junior designers and I just added the third project manager designer. So I would suspect we'd probably have a junior to work with him. Maybe by summer or end of this year. Depends on how many more projects we take on.
You have such a business side to your business.
Right.
You know, we all just have our own, ourselves. And, you know, I know myself, the business is really lacking, but it sounds like you really are invested in the business side of it.
Yeah, I definitely am. And I just, kind of like I said before, I come from that line of thinking, that way of thinking, just from my family business. And I also inherit from my dad this quality. I don't know if it's good or bad. Sometimes it's a nightmare for my mother, but that I always think huge and then that scale it down a little bit if I have to. So I constantly find myself in situations where I'm, you know, thinking as big as possible. And it's not necessarily always a good thing. I love my staff, and I would say just in the last 6 to 12 months have gotten, I think, the right staff. We've been through a ton of transition over the years. This is my 11th year in business. But I feel like we're hitting our stride now, but it's a lot of people. And there's so much management and stuff. There are many times that I wish I was like you guys, that I was just me and lean and mean. But I don't know how to think that way. I need to retrain myself.
Well, you can't handle those kind of jobs with just you.
Well,
you know,
that's true.
You wouldn't be able to.
So how many jobs do you have going at once with a staff that large? For me, it's large.
Well, our goal is to have, before I added this third designer, I think both of my other two designer project managers had about somewhere between 10 and 15 jobs apiece, which is way too many. And so I just added this other person, but our goal would be to have 5 or 6 per person and just have a little bit bigger jobs or at least bigger budget, you know, because there's a lot of payroll and overhead that goes with this group. So we have to have a certain size job to really justify a lot of times, but I'd say we probably have somewhere between maybe around 20, 25 jobs right now.
And wow. It's several That's a lot.
On the pipeline. Yeah. It's a lot.
Well, for Arkansas, do you do work outside of Arkansas?
I do some, but it's primarily here. Now, all of those jobs aren't all at that budget I was talking about right this very minute, but they're either, like, we're still doing some stuff for the clients that's in-house beautiful. Like, we're about to start on their, all their patio and pool house, so that's another phase. So their projects will keep going. I have about an 8 or 9,000 square foot home we're about to start. In fact, we're meeting tomorrow to finalize their plans with the architect. And I have another former client that we're about to start a 4,000 square foot job. And then I have a lot of other people that were in various stages of wrapping up, getting ready to start some new rooms, just starting. You know, some people we just start a room or two because they haven't worked with us before, and we kind of all want to get our feet wet and make sure we're a match. So lots of different stages and phases of stuff.
What's your process when you meet a client? Do they come to your office? Do you go to them? And do you sort of assess them as much as they're assessing you, or what's your process?
Yes, and we're trying to get better about that, assessing the client, because it is so important that it's a fit in both directions. Most of the time I can tell pretty much right off the bat. And, you know, we all know the truth is the thing that really makes clients comfortable with you or not is oftentimes not just personality, but their budget. And I'm really direct about helping clients understand a typical budget that we work with. So that kind of gets us really pretty darn quickly on the same page or not. I go to their house for the first consult, just like a quick meeting usually, so I can see what we're talking about, make sure it's something that I want to get involved with. And then typically after that, we bring them into the office and show them our process. And because we do pretty formal, you know, we do boards, we do PowerPoint presentations. It's a pretty structured process. Everybody that works for me in the design office comes from a formal design education, so we all love that structure of the boards and all of those elements to the presentation. So we get everybody comfortable with that. So let them know what they're going to expect, you know, be expecting.
So you're just very professional.
Well,
yeah.
I think her work goes without saying that she would be very professional. So
yeah,
when you're,
I try to be. I want that. I have a comfort level with that. You know, I think that my talent is something that was probably born there. A lot of it comes from my mom. But I was never a person. I would never be a person that could just decide, oh, I think I'm really good at this and give it a try. I have some sort of level of confidence that comes with my degree and a structure. It's just something that makes me, it doesn't have anything to do with my clients. They don't care really one way or the other. They just care what it looks like, how much it costs, if it's on time. But just for myself, it gives me some sort of a confidence. And so that's kind of what I carry through in a lot of parts of my business too.
So when you do a presentation, your presentation, is that this is what we're going to do for you and like it or like it? You know,
what do you mean?
Well, you said that you bring the clients after you've met with them at their house, then you do presentation board, design boards. Is that pretty much the final design when you present with them?
We offer them a revision in their design fee that we charge, and we can do more if needed. And you know, a lot of times we'll end up doing bits and pieces of things that are revised more than once, but I try to really keep it at that because I found that it can somewhat get out of control. So, you know, some people like to give a lot of options and choices. I just give what I think is the absolute best design first. And then, kind of like I said earlier about my big thinking, I take it as far as I think it needs to go first, and then I scale back if I have to, or I change something if I have to. But most of the time, we don't have a whole lot of changes. I really get to know the client by seeing, you know, their own home, what they love about it, what they don't. You know, pictures and concepts like so many of us use that they have pulled that they like, and I look at their lifestyles, and I'm pretty good at getting to understand what they're looking for, so I'm not usually too far off with our first presentation, but I used to be a lot more than I am now. I guess, you know, some of that's experience talking and knowing what questions to ask, for sure.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I'm sure that people come to you after having seen your work and published on your website. I was looking at In the House Beautiful. The first question you're asked is, give me three words that describe your style, and your response was dramatic, classic, and organized. And, you know, so I would guess that the people who come to you, that's what they're looking for. So they're not really probably surprised by what they see.
Right, pretty much. I mean, I'm known a lot for the bold colors I use. So not a lot of people come to me because they love neutral palettes. You know, mm-hmm. It's usually because they've seen something kind of bright or edgy or different as far as the color or the pattern or scale goes, and that they're really drawn to that kind of work. So, most, for the most part, I would say that's correct.
Do you tend to have a palette that you you gravitate toward? Is it the blues and greens generally, or do you?
Not necessarily. Seems like I've worked in that a lot in the last couple of years. What I really prefer to do is I like to go out and come up with new color combinations, and my favorite thing to do is something that either I haven't done or I haven't necessarily seen, or sometimes I like to pick up on a something that I think is an emerging color trend and use it, you know, when you see people pair, like I put something on my website today that I just did for a charity, well, kind of a show house type project, and it's orange and tangerine, kind of mm-hmm. like a tangerine color with aqua. And so I love to pair a little, what I would call edgy or a little bit outside the box color combinations, and build around that. It's mm-hmm. fun for me, and I think it's different. Sometimes I just did a guest room. Well, it's actually two guest rooms and a Jack and Jill bath in between for a client. I just proposed it recently, and we're just now starting to order it. And it's kind of it's between yellow and chartreuse, and it's paired with some shades of purple. And I don't really use purple that often, but I started with it's one of the new Designers Guild wallpapers, and it's got tones of grays and purple with that chartreuse, and it's really different, and it's even different for me, and I didn't know if I could get the client to buy into it, but she actually really did right off the bat, which was fun. And I find that my clients tire of their rooms that they're a little more unusual, less than the ones that are kind of common and, you know, boring maybe to them after a short period of time.
Well, that's interesting, because I think a lot of times people will say, I've certainly heard it, oh, I'm afraid I'd tire of that, when it's like a bold thing.
Yeah, I kind of find the opposite. They're not all over, you know, sometimes you can get a little too bold. And especially safe to do those color combinations. And this lady, she's probably in her 50s or 60s. Her children are grown. She has grandchildren. It's upstairs. People don't stay in the rooms that often. So it's a really safe place for us to do something fun and outside the box, because she doesn't have to look at it all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an exciting thing to go look at when she wants to, or have people enjoy it. A few years ago, when people were really starting to buy a lot of red furniture, like red sofas and things like that, I found that people like those longer than they like their tan sofa. That just kind of became boring.
Well, so if you have the same clients who stay with you over the 11 years, how often do you find, on an average, do people come and call you to come redo a room that you've done already? Or is it tweaking, or?
Usually a little tweaking. I've definitely done multiple residences for clients. And I have a client now that we're just starting to redo a room that we just did only about 2 or 3 years ago, but it was a really large home, and it was one of the few rooms that we used some of their existing things that just weren't their favorite. So we're really starting from scratch there. So I kind of see varying levels of that. But for the most part, I see my clients live with their designs for a while. I don't see people wanting to redo a lot. I think they will eventually. I haven't been in business quite long enough, but I would say I have clients that have had rooms, you know, for 5 or 6 years. And other than maybe changing out some pillows or things, we put really timeless pieces in there as far as the lines of the furniture. And so they have a lot of longevity, which is good.
Yeah,
you know, I think just going back a minute, it just strikes me that you give your client one thing, and then that's it, and they like it right off. That's just really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't have that experience.
You kind of do, though, Joni. I feel like you do, or maybe I just am sensitive to this for the same reason, because I feel like if you don't, and the three of us have talked about this, if you don't, from the very beginning, really set up your boundaries, I feel that people will go, why don't we try something else? Maybe we could try that, you know, maybe can you go out and find this? And it can stretch on and on. But yeah. Jenny, I just feel like you are one of those people that presents and then
really
hit it right off the top. It always seems like it. So I was surprised, Toby, when you said that. I would be so worried to go into the everything that you, you know, the boards, all the presentations that you put together, for fear that you, which I've done before and have had people go, oh, that looks really great, but no.
Let me just say this. My clients are very, usually very fabric like they want to, a lot of my clients want to micromanage every fabric. They want to see choices.
Yeah.
And just,
yeah.
How do you get around your fabric? Your clients don't care, or they just love what fabric you put on something and that's it?
I guess they love it, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just bossier than y'all are. I don't know. I just, I try to persuade them to trust me on something. If I see them kind of wavering and I think it's something that's really right, then I try to, you know, say, why do you not like this? And, you know, do you think this is a little uncomfortable because maybe it's a little outside your typical comfort zone, but it might be something that might make the room more exciting. And I try to help them understand that I think the things they see about my work that they love are maybe things that they wouldn't necessarily do themselves, and that's why they've come to me. So I try to get them to, and it doesn't always work, but I try to get them to trust me. And I'm pretty good at, if it's something that I can almost give a money-back guarantee on, like if something small, like if I say, okay, well, I really want this fabric in the room. It's really super important to me, so let's put it on this side chair, and if you just cannot stand it, I'll take it back and I'll put it in another client's house. I don't say it that obviously about the whole room, and it's not necessarily about giving them their money back. I would give them something different, but I can give them some things like that that make them really trust me because they know I mean it, because I have done that before if I have to. But I'm really pretty confident with my abilities and knowing that maybe if they can't visualize it now, once they see it all in there together and it makes sense, that they'll really like it.
Which is the whole key, which is what can be so frustrating in this profession, because people will see a piece of fabric, you know, and they'll pass the judgment on it because they can't visualize it. And you know that it's going to look so much different when it's in the room. Even the paint color can look different. You know, it's so hard to get them past that jump.
Honey, I just had a experience with a client where I found the fabric that I wanted in her dining room window treatments, and I showed her nothing else. And I was like, this is all I'm showing you because I want you to have this and only this. And then she grew to love it, and then she was carrying it around a store because she was looking at something. She said people were coming up to her asking her what the fabric was, which was, of course, good validation. But yeah, definitely, I think if I'd showed her what I normally do, a few things, even though that was my favorite and I might have put it on top, you know, I might not have gotten what I wanted in that case.
Well, and you know, it depends on everybody's process, but the fabrics are the key ingredient for me, and that's how I start every single job. I get in my workroom and I pull out all some fabrics that I love, and I build the color palette and the fabric scheme first. And then I go backwards. I don't even know necessarily what those pieces are going on. I don't know that this is the sofa and this is the pillow. I just build something that speaks to me, that I think represents the client. And then I go backwards and say, okay, how does this work with the architecture and the lighting and all that kind of stuff? So it doesn't really work when you build a scheme that way, other than maybe an item here or there to have a whole lot of different choices. Because if they pick, you know, choice one of one thing and two of another and three of another, they don't necessarily go together. So I kind of built this intricate fabric scheme, and then maybe we might pluck out one little chair or pillow fabric that they don't like and put something, you know, slightly different. Maybe if it was a geometric and they wanted a damask, then we tweak that a little bit. But it's kind of hard to give choices the way I work, and it all be fixed and
matched. I see that. Toby, have you ever had a presentation that you did, you know, the storyboard, everything, and then you go to present it and the client look at it and say, oh, I just hate this?
I had one client about, let's see, probably the only one I can really recall about 6 years ago or so, when I was really, it was one of my first what I would call larger jobs. I think it was like about $100,000 to $150,000 budget for a group of rooms, and I didn't know as much as I know now about what questions to ask, and so they gave me a lot of pictures of things they loved, and I kept seeing lots of like pale blues and kind of chamois yellows, and it kind of had a little bit of maybe a Restoration Hardware look, and so I did this whole scheme and this board, and we did some renderings and of the kitchen, and it all had blue paint on the wall, and she was like, oh my gosh, it's all so blue. and she had said she liked blue, but she just couldn't visualize. So I learned a really big lesson there. I think we had, like, some blue paper on the boards, and I've learned so much about how to present something. And what I actually started doing, which has worked beautifully, is I had a bunch of large, like 20 by 30 cork boards framed with really pretty frames, and we use really pretty pins. And so I pin it all on a cork board instead of on, like, matte paper board. And so that's if smart. They don't like something, I pop it off and I put something else in its place. And so it's all movable. If they want to touch something, I can pull it off the board. And then if they say, oh, now I want to see it back up there, I can pin it right back on. So I kind of have this modular board. And then it's so easy to tweak a PowerPoint. And these girls and this now a gentleman that I have working for me are so savvy with all that stuff. They can do computer renderings. They can do all the stuff that I can't do because I'm 10 years older than them and they didn't even have when I was in school. And they can just tweak something and move it and drop it in and color it. And it helps the client so, so much. But it's really not as permanent as things used to be when we did boards that were glued together and took 15 hours a piece to build.
Let me ask you this, Toby. You have a definite style and a definite look. I mean, I would call it classically contemporary, maybe. You know, I'm not sure what you did, how you define your look. I myself, I'm always torn. You know, I look at a magazine and I'll see, you know, three different styles. I'll see, you know, like a contemporary or a cottage look, and then a rustic look. And I'm always torn. What do I like? You know, my style inside. Mm-hmm. Do you ever waver, or are you just straight as a board on your look?
No, I think it wavers a lot. It doesn't waver as much in color palette and fabric, the use of fabric and patterned fabrics as it does from maybe styles and formality. You know, like I can do something that's pretty formal and more ornate, which I have done a client that has a really ornate taste, which is not my typical, but I kind of do my version of that, which is still a little cleaner. And then I've done lake houses and cabins and cottages, all kinds of projects, really, but they just have a common theme as far as they always have a good bit of color and a good bit of pattern in them. Lots of soft goods. I love drapery. Textiles are, you know, one of the key elements to everything I do. But definitely there's a good bit of variety.
Now, speaking of color, the House Beautiful issue, the color of the room on the cover is significantly different than the color on the inside of the same room. So which is closest to the actual room?
I don't remember, and I don't have it right in front of me, but I wish I did. Maybe I could. What would you, how do you describe?
Look at page 72, 73.
No, I don't see what you're talking about. You mean because the walls are a little bit lighter on the cover?
Well, in my book, it's enormously lighter.
No,
yeah, the cover is significantly lighter, shades and shades lighter than the spread.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. What's the blue? Does it say Sugar Lane Silver Mist. You know what, Linda? I bet you the front has been manipulated.
That's what I think, just so the print will
just
show
to
up.
To work with the title.
Probably
sort of
so, yeah, because they used all those different colors of blue in the title and layered it all in there. So probably the front was changed a little bit, but I'm not certain.
So that doesn't bother you?
I honestly didn't really notice it much. So, I guess not. I mean, I do recall noticing that the artwork and the pillows look a little more gray on the front than that maybe they are, because in reality they're really not a whole lot contrasting to the wall. I mean, they are a little bit more gray, but I do kind of remember that was a little richer contrast, and I noticed it with the title block, which I thought it looked interesting and clever. So no, I didn't get attached to any issues with that. I don't get consumed with little details like that. I thought it looked really fun, so I didn't take offense to that.
How did this cover story come about?
Well, I had seen Stephen Drucker and Newell Turner at in High Point. And Newell is a friend of one of my good friends, Diane Carroll, who's now the editor of At Home in Arkansas magazine. But she used to be my field editor for Traditional Home, and she was actually the person who helped get me in Traditional Home the first time I was in there, and then ultimately that got me the top 20 designer thing. And so Newell and I had kind of been building a little bit of a relationship when we would see each other at market and on Facebook and a little bit on Twitter, which was fun. And so I had just a fun opportunity that we ended up in the hallway outside of one of the showrooms at High Point, and for 10 or 15 minutes just had a relaxed, casual conversation with Stephen and Newell. And I happened to say, I have a project that is almost done, and I think it would be a beautiful fit for your magazine, and I want to send it to you. So I actually had also been talking with Jennifer at Peak of Chic, and she scouts for them, and I sent it to her first, and she said, okay, well, you never know what they like. Let me send it in. And I think that was like around the second week of November, this past November. And I know this never, ever happens this quickly, but they called me, I think I sent it in maybe the last week of October, and they called me like the second week of November and said, this never happens, but we have our blue issue and we're holding it open for the perfect project to really be kind of the anchor for this issue, and we don't have it and we think your project's it. Can we fly our best people in on November 30th, shoot it December 1st and 2nd, and get it in our issue that we are holding open right now past deadline? Wow. And I was like, let me think about it. Okay.
Maybe. Yes. Yeah.
I called my client, and I was like, whatever you do, do not put up a Christmas decoration. And if you've got one up, take it down. We're coming to your house. And they were really excited about it. You never know how clients are going to react. I knew they didn't want their name in any projects necessarily, but I thought that they were going to be open to having it published. And they ended up really, really excited about it. It's been a very fun experience for them. So,
well, Drucker did say that they are really working much, much faster now. Remember that, y'all?
Yeah.
When she was talking about that, I was remembering our conversation with Stephen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really pushing not having inventory on their stories and getting them out as soon as possible. So
I think that makes magazines better.
Definitely.
Because trends come and go so quickly these days.
Right, exactly.
They've got to have the latest. I mean, I don't really want something necessarily unless it's a fluke that, you know, for example, Aqua and Orange, that somebody happened to get into that last year and now it's the hottest thing. I mean, typically it's kind of going to be like, I just got My House Beautiful for next month today, and it's a lot of like pale pink and kind of orchid colors. And I'm actually working on a project with a client that I presented a couple of weeks ago or a month ago that's exactly in those tones, and I'm really excited about it. And it was so validating to see that on the front of their magazine today. But I think
Jackie Van Tobel said that that's the color in Europe and in the show in Paris, that everything was that mauvey purple and pink, right, y'all?
Yeah.
And you know, it's so funny, I was just in San Francisco a couple weekends ago, and I went into one of my favorite stores up in Mill Valley in Marin County, and she had, and it's called Summer House, and she had just opened an annex or another store a few doors down, and it was, I should have taken pictures of it. It was exactly what she was talking about. One entire wall was that kind of grayed purple, and then the other walls were sort of a putty color, you know, so the whole thing gave you the...
Well, I love it. And it's fun. I was so excited to see that on their magazine, and the room I did is much more pink than purple, but it definitely goes a little bit towards that kind of mauve tone. But I didn't know, you never know. That was one of the projects that I was a little anxious about, whether the client, I thought if ever I put one out there that the client could say no to the whole thing, this could be it, because it was a little bit of a risk. And I've got ceramic sample from Chris Fitzmiller, because I love his lamps, and he has a brand new pale pink color, so I have these pink lamps, and it's the formal living room of a house, and it's a huge living room. And so it's all layered in tones of creams to beige to taupe, and then these blush pinks. And it's a decent amount of pink in there, and I didn't know if she would go for it. Although she is a really feminine lady, I mean, she's married to a really masculine, tall man. I just couldn't tell, but she really loves it. It's funny, the things that she didn't like were not the pinks. It was like, she did, a few of the furniture pieces were a little too clean line for her. Joni, she likes some of the stuff like you use, like a much more French inspired piece of furniture or a leg and antiques and that kind of thing. So, but she loved the pink, which is exciting.
Oh, I can't wait to see it when you're through.
Oh,
I love those Chris Fitzmiller lamps. Those to me are the ultimate. They're so yummy. You just want to lick them. They're like candy.
They're
in this project in the living room.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Those are they in that shot. But they are beautiful and they're worth every penny, I think, because you know they're hand done, they're porcelain, they're works of art, they're fine art. Do you find it hard for people to swallow that price, or do they even know? Is it just kind of lumped in there?
No, they definitely know. And sometimes I do, but I love them so much. I tell them I would rather them cut something else than cut those lamps. And some people just can't, they cannot pay that much for a lamp. They can't even comprehend it. I've gotten a lot of people used to it because I teach them about them and who Chris is and what's so great about them. And mm-hmm. So I've won a lot of people over to my side, but it's definitely a huge
You know, I've never bought one myself for a client. How much do they run? I've always been curious.
They're typically around about $3,500 a lamp. $2,500 to $3,500 a lamp. Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
So if you get a pair of them, a lot of times you're at $5,000 to $6,000.
That's why I was saying, Joni, that's why I was asking her. How do you, if someone doesn't understand what they are, you do. You have to educate them. It's art, you know?
Right, but isn't it, I mean, that's in relation to an entire budget, you know?
Right.
So,
you know, and I mean, if you're spending $1 million on a house, they're going to not care that much about
right.
the two, you know, which we do, you know, on some of these really great houses that I do, because the other thing you have to think about is the size of a house in Arkansas, because we have so much property and so much land, you know, like a lot of other southern states, like Joni in Texas, we're talking, you know, 6, 8, 10,000 square foot houses sometimes. So a client is going to have to understand that they're going to have a larger budget depending on the level of quality you're going. So if we're outfitting a really, you know, large home and they've already built the house and it's $2 or $3 million, then we can get somebody to commit $600,000 to $800,000 for their budget for the house.
So the $6,000 in lamps just gets absorbed. That's what I'm saying. Do they even know, or can you just?
Well, they do know because the way I actually show them all the prices per item. But I'm really good at. I have a way of estimating budgets on houses, and so I'm really straightforward on the front end of a project about telling the client how much I think they're going to need to spend to get what they're telling me they want. So I kind of get their initial culture shock out of them early on. And a lot of people will say, no, you may think we're going to spend that much, but we're not. And almost to the T, every time they spend what I tell them they're going to spend.
You mean they don't walk away? Like, say, let's say you an average living room, you'll tell someone, oh, it's going to be $150,000 for this quality. And they say, well, we're not going to spend that. And then they don't walk away when you say that's what you need to spend?
Well, I ask a lot of questions before we get that far in so that I know that the client and I are on the same level to begin with. Like, I'll ask things like, you know, what's your comfort level with a sofa? Are you comfortable spending $1,000? Are you comfortable spending $8,000? Are you comfortable spending somewhere in the middle or $2,500? I start kind of by asking questions like that because it can tell you a whole lot of information right off the bat. Because if they're like, are you kidding me? Do they even make $8,000 sofas?
Yeah.
Then I know what we're dealing with. And if they say, well, you know, my last sofa out in our Colorado house that I worked with such and such client, I think was like $6,500, then I understand that this is a client who is going to understand the type of quality and price point that we work in. So I ask a whole lot of those questions before I even contract with a client because there's nothing wrong with not spending that much money. In fact, I can't afford personally that kind of product for my own home. And we do work with clients with lesser budgets than that, for sure. But, you know, there's sometimes when I say, you know, our typical vendor that we're comfortable with and the resources that we work with on a daily basis in our office and that we have relationships with those vendors is probably a good bit outside of your price point, and it really wouldn't make sense for me to commit to a job like, you know, like yours, when maybe my fee's going to take a whole lot of your budget and you're not going to get a lot for your money. So I try to be really honest with people, because I have a staff of 12, like we talked about, and I have a big payroll and a big overhead. And so I have to make a certain price point, a certain margin on my jobs, really, to make it profitable for us. And so there's a lot of that kind of discussion on the front end to know that we're talking the same language, that we're talking about the same sort of project. And I made the mistake early on when I worked in projects much less expensive than what I work in now, even, of not having those talks in the beginning. And then you put in a lot of effort and a lot of energy, and it's kind of wasted time, because at some point you and the client decide you're not on the same page. What type of budgets do you all typically work in?
Nothing like what you're talking about.
Much smaller.
I was thinking about the client who said to me the other day, oh, we were talking about, I can't remember, it was some store here in LA, and she goes, God, but everything's so expensive there. And I said, really? I always think of it as well made, but pretty inexpensive. I mean, she's like, I was in there and there was a sofa for like $2,500 to $3,000. I mean, that, to me, that's a lot. I was like, oh, yeah, well, that's not really in the bigger scope of things. And yeah, I said, so if it's going to be $10,000, she's like, what? And I said, yeah. And this was someone who has a really pretty home. It's just that was her comfort level.
And I don't work only in that price point. Like, I have one job right now that's a whole house remodel, and it's a family. It's like a blended family, and there's like 5 or 6 kids. And I think our whole budget for the whole house, it's like 5,000 square foot house, is like $250,000. And so we're really having to stretch our dollars to get what they want, because it's a big house. We got to have 6 kids' bedrooms and their bedroom and 2 or 3 public spaces. And so
it doesn't go as far as you think it will.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah.
So that's actually one of the smaller budgets, even though to me it's, and to y'all, it's still a whole lot of money, but it just goes away really quickly when you start dividing that up for rent.
It does. It does.
Is not anything like what we're talking about. My mom even says, I can't afford you, even when I get stuff at your cost.
Right.
So, I mean, the majority of it, and that's why, like you said, that's what I love to do on the blog, and that's why I love the blog so much, because 90% of the population is going to be either like us or other people that you're talking about that have to do it themselves or buy it a piece at a time or along the way. And so that can help them. They can take a room and build it kind of as they go over time.
Well, I think that's sort of one of the, so like a little secret of designers, and why it's a shame some people are overly sensitive to even talk to a designer, because most designers can't afford themselves.
Grant Gibson said the same thing when he was on.
Yeah.
Remember that? And then, you know, it's the cobbler has no shoes syndrome.
Hey, that's my goal in life, is to be able to afford myself.
Right.
Toby, is your house on your
website? It's on the website. Are you on the website?
Yeah. Which one is?
It's called Inverness.
Oh, that's actually your house. I love your house.
Thank you. I mean, so I'm sure, I mean, yeah, over time, I know I've put over $100,000 in it over time, but I could never do like my clients do and write a check for, you know, $250,000 and say, see how far this goes, and then I'll give you some more. I mean, I can't even fathom that. So, but that's, you know, that's the beauty of working your way up in this profession and getting to a point where you feel like, I mean, I'm certainly not where I can pick and choose every job, and I can't really afford to turn jobs down that are a great fit just because I feel like it by any means. But it's exciting to start getting to a place where I can work in budgets that I can be really creative and use really some of the top products. Because you look at that project on a House Beautiful, and you look at, you know, a 2 Jan Showers end tables and a Nancy Kors design coffee table. I mean, that's like my whole living room budget right there.
Yeah, I was looking at those end tables. I can imagine what those cost, just the end tables.
I can't remember, but they're thousands a piece.
Yeah.
But they're fabulous, and they're wonderful. And, you know, it's all relative when different people, and it's certainly, I always tell my employees, early on when I first started getting bigger and bigger budgets, and I had a different staff than I have right now, I would find it hard sometimes for my employees to work for these people, because the reality is, for my employees and for me sometimes, that we might buy a piece of furniture that's equivalent to what we make in a year, which is nuts. But then you look at, I always tell them not to judge our clients because so many of our clients are self-made. We all come from if they live here, we come from a very rural state. A lot of them are generations of families that have worked really, really hard and continue to work hard for all the things that they have. And so many of them are so generous and give so much to charities and supporting other things. So I've had to kind of over time help my staff understand that it's all relative, and it's really not our place to, you know, make a judgment or pass judgment on these people, because oftentimes what they're spending on their house, they're giving an equivalent amount to help other people or their children. And so, you know, so that kind of puts it in perspective a little bit.
Right. And just sort of, I think the simple fact is they're paying your salaries.
Exactly. Like, we should be grateful for right. every dime that they, you know, are willing to spend and trust us with. I call it trusting us with their right. money, because they are doing exactly that. And we're giving them something that can last for a long time. And, you know, as we were talking about earlier, although I kind of worked myself out of a job for a few years with some clients, it's such a compliment that I create a design and they're not coming back necessarily in 5 and sometimes even 10 years and already tired of it or wanting to redo it. That says a lot about how wisely we've helped them spend their money.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us about your blog and what you feel blogging, given how busy you obviously are, what you feel blogging has done for you.
Oh my gosh, blogging has, I say, moved my career ahead at least 10 years in a year and a half, maybe 15. It's been such a game changer for me because I am in a small area that otherwise wouldn't have the kind of exposure and the outreach that I have, and I have this platform that I can self-promote my projects, and it really equals the playing field. For me, where in the past I was far, far from that with other people like some of you in California and New York and all these other metropolitan places, you know, it would have taken me years to work my way up to that kind of exposure that people can get in bigger cities. So it's been huge, huge.
What made you decide to start doing it? Just reading others and...
No, actually, I got up because of my, you know, here goes my structure again, but I'm a big fan of using design consultants and going to seminars, and so I've always put a lot of stock in other experts and knowing when I don't know everything and should rely on some other people. So I've gone for several years to some conferences by a guy named David Shepherd. About, I would say in 2007 or so, one of the conferences I went to of his was in Atlanta, and it was about building your celebrity brand. And this was the first time I'd ever heard of a blog. And so I'm in a network of designers from across the country under his tutelage, I guess. He's not a personal consultant, but we network and we go to these conferences together. And so I started watching a few other people that were in his group have blogs, and one of them is named Mark Cutler. And Megan, do you know Mark?
I know his blog too. Sweetheart and very talented.
Super sweet. So Mark's in our group, our little network, and he was one of the people that stood up at that conference and said, yes, I have a blog. And so after about a year of listening and thinking about it, I thought, well, this sounds kind of fun. I had no idea what I was getting into. I didn't even know that many were out there. I had just kind of started reading a few, and I was reading All the Best, and Now Rhonda's a really good friend of mine. I was reading Coco and Kelly and some of the fun ones like that just had really fun, you know, what I call eye candy. But I really didn't have a clue. And I thought, well, this will just be a fun way to express myself, and I love it because it's something that can be done in a day. You know, I can write a post and it has an ending, because so many of our projects go on for an eternity and you feel like you never get to check it off your to-do list. So I thought, this is cool. I can just write one, post it, be done with it. I immediately started getting feedback. You know, like you do, you have a blog and then you go leave a post on someone else's blog and then suddenly they find you. And so almost instantly, within just a month or two, I was having people like Ann Sage of the City Sage, you know, call and say, oh my gosh, I didn't know about you. I followed the link to your site. I love your work. Can I write an art? Can I feature you as a designer? And so it really took off with people wanting to feature my work at first more than reading my blog. But I just started building this network of people, and it was just happening, immediately. And it's like when you hit a good golf shot or tennis shot, if you're an athlete and you think, oh, now I'm really, really good at this, and you're kind of addicted. It was that I got that instant gratification, and I was really, really hooked immediately. And
well, I think you did take it by storm immediately. I remember that. You know, you were there, and you weren't just a blogger. It was very obvious that, you know, you were a great talent behind the blog.
Thank you. Well, at first, I wasn't seeing many people like you talented ladies that were designers writing blogs. I was just seeing what I call a lot of design enthusiasts. And even though y'all were already there, I just didn't know. You know, it takes a little while to kind of find everybody. And so that was something interesting from my perspective, to bring an actual designer's eye and opinion to the story. And I think people really liked that, because other mm-hmm. people can speculate why somebody did something or talk about what's inspiring about this piece, but it's different to be able to say, I selected this because of this, or my client wanted this. And I think it makes it sometimes more useful and helpful to that do-it-yourselfer that's reading our post to say, oh, this is how she did it, and this is why she did it. That makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you you showcase some of your own work in your blog, obviously. Do you ask your clients permission? You know, do you ever think you need to do that, or do you just, where's that line? Because yeah. I always find that really uncomfortable.
I do, and we've gotten where we put that now in our, we always put it in our contracts that we could use their photography as needed to
yeah.
promote, but not necessarily use their names or locations. And so it's pretty much covered in my contract, because it says we can use the photography, but I try to go ahead and tell people it's on the blog. Now, what I try not to do is really expose someone's design before it's finished and published, because I don't want someone to be able to recreate it before my client can actually even get in their house and enjoy it. So that makes me sometimes not be able to share things that I wish I could share sooner, because I don't want to undermine my client's design. Do y'all find that same thing?
Yeah, I mean, I've every now and again posted a couple things that I'm working on, just like a little piece of it.
Right.
But I feel uncomfortable showcasing too much of either, particularly their before pictures. You know, if I show
right.
where it's coming from, because, you know, that starts getting in that realm of, you know, they may not really have wanted everyone to know what
exactly.
their rooms looked like.
Well, yeah. And my area is so small, I have to be a little careful, too, because if some of the before pictures being done by maybe another designer, then you don't want to offend anybody, or, yeah, that does get a little bit touchy, I think.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, Toby, we are just about at an hour, which has gone very quickly. It's been really, really great to sort of hear your process and learn more about you. And it's really interesting, to hear the structure and process of your business that's behind the creative, obviously the foundation to the creative work.
It's always such a value, I think. I get emails from people who listen to these podcasts, and often it's students, it's people just beginning, and it's such a huge value that when people will be generous and share. So I know that, you know, all the information that you've imparted and your experience, and it just makes people really inspired to hear this sort of thing. So thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I hope it does. I'm a little anxious now, to, you know, worried that I don't want to have offended anyone talking about budgets, because I do know that's a touchy subject. I'm just always one to be open, like you said, for that very reason. It's not anything about bragging as much as it is to just help people understand. And, you know, it's not that hard to add up, because you look at anybody who's a designer is going to look at a project like that and know how much things cost. The consumer
yeah.
doesn't necessarily, but if they find the source guide and then they call and ask about it, they're going to get to the information eventually. So
exactly. Right. Look, we didn't set the prices. It's just, it is what it is.
Well, I'm not really announcing it yet, because I don't know how it's all coming together, but I am actually working on, because I'm always one to like to kind of be on the front end of some other trends, and I have for years been trying to figure out how I can work for some lesser budgets at the same time as my high-end budgets, because honestly, you know, the majority of my friends and my parents' friends are not in the budgets that we're talking about. And so, I mean, my parents do really well, and we have many things that we want all the time in our family, and it's not even close to being able to come in and drop $500,000 on a project at one time. And so I'm working on some ideas that are along the ideas of some online design type services where you can at least offer just the service and not sell the product. But it's real interesting because there's such a fine line between what you can give someone that doesn't compare to the high-end client, because I can't give them the same thing that I'm charging someone hundreds of thousands of dollars for. But I think that there's an idea that it can coexist, and I'm working on that right now, which will make me really excited if it can work. And I think there's a chance that it can, actually.
Yeah, I've been doing the online design for a while, and it's different. You know, it's not as satisfying, certainly.
Because tell them about local resources, or do you do online resources, or how do you do it?
Generally, it's on things that are available online.
Yeah.
At least it gives them the blueprint of what to look for and scale and size and proportion and those things that the designer really is bringing to the project.
Right.
You know, that they usually that's what the client, you know, people, regular homeowners, civilians mess up themselves because they're just not educated in that.
Right. Well, I think, I don't know. I mean, it can't exactly come just for me, and it certainly won't be one-on-one when I have other clients that are paying me so much to do that with them. But I think definitely some part of my company and my staff could offer something like that. And because we get calls, you know, every single week and sometimes every day from people that are so supportive and that are such huge fans, and I value those people so, so much. And it really does make me feel bad if they say, okay, you know, my budget is $5,000 and I want to do this whole room, and that has to include design fee and product, and that's just, you know, not really something that we can do. And so as opposed to saying, you know, okay, we'll get back in the business of just selling you a sofa or a chair, it would make so much more sense, like you're saying, if I could kind of give them a blueprint and say, you know, at least I can do this for a portion of your budget, and then you could, or someone on my staff could, and give you kind of this roadmap, and you could implement it as you see fit and as you have time.
I
wish we could talk all the time. If y'all decide to add a fourth person to your roundtable or one of y'all are sick, call me. This is fun.
Okay, great.
That's an idea. It is kind of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I like it. It was really fun. Thank you. Yeah.
This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, Joni Webb from Cote to Texas, and I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings. And this week we are joined by interior designer Toby Fairley. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com or download our podcasts from iTunes. Search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thank you so much, and we'll be back soon.